and on the verge of self-destruction. The planet is Earth.
Okay, ship, we're planning to start with North Africa.
Oh, are you? I selected a number of brilliant initial sites, none of which were in that continent, but feel free.
So we're going to need different immunities?
The minuscule drones floating at your shoulders, already disguised as mosquitoes, have just changed your biochemistries appropriately.
I'm distraught that you won't allow me to go down there, just because of my chosen body shape.
You could change it.
Shan't.
The State of the Art by Ian M. Banks is on BBC Radio 4 Extra next Wednesday morning at 11:15 and again in the evening at 9:15.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Now, as 4 Extra marks the 25th anniversary of the death of a legendary comic, here's a rare outing for A Good Bit of Howard from August 1963, in which Frankie Howard reveals some of his secrets to Pete Murray. It all sounds very scripted, but the conceit is that Pete had to work very hard to get Frankie's story out of him. Well, I once interviewed Frankie myself over the phone when he was due to put on a show at Coventry's Belgrade Theatre. He wasn't the easiest. At one point, inexplicably, as it wasn't one of those Clive Anderson Bee Gees type moments, he put the phone down. And I had to keep phoning him back to complete the interview. Now, this programme starts with one of those tunes that those of us of a certain age will remember.
Right, go. Now, down in the meadow, in a little fishy pool, lives three little fishes and a mama fishy too. Now swim, said the mama fishy, swim if you can. Are you taking the mickey? So they swam and they swam right over the dam.
Hello. Now, the voice that has been sending you belongs to Francis Alec Howard, known here as the sex kitten of the BBC, and known to the outside world as the reason for whatever happened to Baby Jane. Now, the BBC have had literally thousands of requests to do a programme devoted entirely to young me, you see. Now, this is not just a gag. Oh, no, it's true, quite true. They've had letter after letter requesting this. My tongue ached with sticking the stamps on. But now, as you know, it's very difficult to praise yourself in public. So here to help me is Pete Murray.
Name dropper.
I see. Star of stage, street and radio.
Hello, everybody. Now, right, let's start at the beginning.
I think that's a good idea.
Yes, it's a good place to start. Now, where were you born?
York.
I see, York. In what year?
My first.
I'll rephrase the question. How many years have you lived?
I'll rephrase the answer. Everyone since I was born.
Frank, please answer. How old are you?
27.
Times what?
You mean you don't believe me?
Oh, Frank, don't be like that. Of course I believe you were born in York. Yes, now tell me, Frank.
What?
when did you start your career?
Ah, now I'm glad you asked that. Pardon?
Your career, when did you start it?
Oh, the career, yes. Ah, well, professionally, you mean, don't you? For
yes,
money.
Quite. Yes,
in 1946, just after the war, before the war, during the war as well, I did a lot of amateur work. I was an amateur.
Were you really?
Yes, I was.
Didn't I hear that at one time you wanted to be a straight actor?
Well, what do you mean? Do you mean a serious actor?
Yes, yes.
Well, I suppose I did at one time.
When you were young?
Well,
younger than you are now.
Yeah, well, that's, yes.
27, I think you said.
That's what I said, yes. Now, just before the war, because I made this unsuccessful attempt to get into the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. It was unsuccessful.
Why was that?
Well, they didn't take children in arms, that's why.
I see.
Yes.
So you never studied the drama?
No, I didn't.
Never studied elocution?
Never.
And to prove it, listeners, I want you to hear this excerpt from a recent broadcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, recently I had the pleasure, quite recently, and actually it was last Thursday, if you must know, and actually I addressed this meeting. And I'll tell you what happened, I'll tell you how it was. I was at home making myself a cup of cocoa, and I was trying to get the top off my hot water bottle because I always keep some cocoa in my hot water bottle because, no, well, I mean, after you've got your feet warm, there's no pleasure in getting out of bed again. So I have a swig out the hot water bottle. So anyway, there I was with the bottle struggling to get my hat off because I always wear my hat in bed. somewhere to keep the toast warm. And I usually keep a crust jammed under the peak, you know, sort of in case of night starvation, you know. And there I was in the middle of supper. And the phone rang, you see, and over the page. So, the phone rang. Hello, I thought. What a pixie face I've got, haven't I? Hello. Hello, I thought. There's someone on the phone. Because you get these premonitions. And then a voice said, Mr. Howard? Well, I was amazed. Because I hadn't picked up the phone yet. Isn't this laughable, isn't it? Oh, please yourselves. Anyway, so I answered this. I answered the phone because, and I said, hello, you see. I said, because it's silly to say goodbye when you don't even know who it is. So I said, whom is it? I said, whom is it? Now, she said, this woman, she said to me, she said, do you know our society, the Expectant Mothers of Bromley? So I said, well, I said, not by name, I said, but I said, I'd probably recognise them if I saw them. So she said, you don't understand. She said, we're in a bit of a spot. So I said, well, I don't see how I can help. I said, there's not much I can do at this stage. I said, because, she said, no, you see, our local MP, listen, please, he's getting rowdy. Listen. Now, our local MP has let us down. So I said, well, look, I've got a pint of stout in the fridge. I said, she said, no. She said, no, look. She said, would you speak to the Expectant Mothers of Bromley? So I said, well, look, I speak to anybody if they're civil to me. I said, I'm not proud. She said, no. She said, I want you to speak to them personally, if you could. So I said, speak to them. Oh, I said, well, what can I tell them they don't already know? I said, so yes. So she said, we'd like you to address a meeting tonight on the Common Market. The Common Market. So I said, I'm very flattered, I said. I'm very flattered, I said, but why me? I said, there must be other people who know more about the Common Market than me. I said, I mean, there's, what's his name, the Lord Hume, you know, the Foreign Secretary. I said, what he doesn't know about the Common Market would fill a book. So she said, yeah, we tried. But he's at an all-night sitting on, you know. So I said, So I said, what about Marples, Mr. Marples? She said, well, I rang him up, but he hasn't got home from work yet. It's all this traffic, you know. So I said, well, yes. I said, probably, I know very well. I said, he's probably caught up in his underpass. So she said, we're down to you. I said, well, now, why me? She said, well, you opened the old people's white elephant last year, and so we fancied you for this, you see. So, well, I had to agree to do this because you can't refuse an expectant mother, you know, when she fancies something. Because my sister-in-law used to get these mad fancies, you know, that's my married sister, and she used to get these mad things because every night she used to wake up with this mad desire for whipped cream and faggots. You always had this. Yes. And of course, my brother, it was a shame because he had to scour the district for these things, you see. And he was out all night sometimes, and he was, of course, after about 3 years, he tumbled, of course. I mean, he's no fool, because just greedy. Anyway, see, and so fat, poor soul. It's not surprising, all that whipped cream and faggots, innit? What was I talking about before I so rudely interrupted? Oh, yes, now my lecture. Now, it was such a success that I've been asked to repeat this on the BBC. And so, here at last is the truth behind the Common Market. Now you're saying to yourselves, what's behind the market? What's behind the market? Well, let us consider. Let us consider the wider issue, Europe. Now, you know Europe. Of course, you know Europe, madam. That's that bit of land out of sight of Canvey Islands. You know, it's full of foreigners full of Frenchmen and Belgians and Luxembourgers, you know. That class of person. Now, the thing is, how do we feel about going into the market? Well, I held a poll recently. Olga, her name was, and she came from Warsaw, from Poland, and she just left, you see, this poll. And she said, why don't you ask the man in the street? So I did. So this woman came along. I asked her, I said, now look, if we go into the market, I said, will you stand behind Mr. Macmillan? She said, no, I always stand behind Mrs. Burgess, because she said, we chat about our gallstones in the fish queue. So I thought... I thought to myself, well, Fife Robertson never had all this trouble for a start. So this man came along. I said to him, now, do you support the idea of a Europe united? He said, I support Leighton Orient. So I said, well, look, no, how do you feel about de Gaulle? He said, it was offside. Oh, it was humorous. It was humorous. I wasn't daunted. I carried on. Now, of all the people I questioned, 20% said they didn't know what the common market was. 40% said they didn't care what the common market was. 10% said they'd never had it so good. And 29% said they'd never had it at all. All of which leaves us in a right tarradiddle. And the best of luck.
Well, Peter, what did you think of that?
I found it strangely moving.
You sit where you are.
Now, let us talk about your art, Frank.
My art! My art! Yes. Ah, yes.
How do you make an audience laugh?
Well, I must be honest.
Good. How old are you?
27. So help me.
I will. I hope you can't.
Actually, the credit for my laugh should go to my writers, you see. Because really, my writers, I mean, all I do is I just read their lines.
Oh, Frank, you're too modest.
Oh.
Mind you, I agree that writers are very important.
Oh, they are.
You've had some exceptionally good writers in the past, haven't you?
Oh, marvellous. I've been very lucky. Eric Sykes, Johnny Spake, Gorton Simpson, to name but one. And the two I've got now are very good. Two new, well, they're very with it, you see.
That's are they young?
Very with it.
Are they young? Young.
Oh, yes, they're both the same age as me.
What? You mean both of them added together?
Peter, I realise that 12 and 50 may seem very young, but at least their scripts are modern and hip. See, they're with it.
Well, listeners, I'll play you one more excerpt. And I'm sure you'll believe, Mr. Hyde, that these scripts are indeed written by Juvenile.
Oh, thank you.
Pleasure.
How are you? Are you all right? I don't feel, you know, I'm usually sort of, you know, but... I tell you how it started now. No, listen. No, you see, I went to the doctor's. It was yesterday, Sunday. No, Tuesday week. I went in the evening to the doctor's, you see. I'll go in the evening because it gives his hands a chance to warm up. And, First thing in the morning, woo! So anyway, I went round, and I wasn't poorly. Ladies and gentlemen, I wasn't poorly, but you see, I live next door to this doctor, and he had his car parked in front of our house, and I thought, I'm sorry, he'll have to move it, you see, because we were expecting the dust cart, and I thought, I'm sorry, he's got to get in, you see, and you have to be ruthless. So I went into his surgery, you see, and it was packed out. All these people sat round the walls, you know, and these little coughing and spluttering. And I was sat there reading The Undertaker's Weekly, you know, and you know, by the time I got in to see him, I felt worse than they did. You know, you do. So I got in there, you see, and he said to me, oh, thank goodness you got here in time. He said, you're in a... And I said, no, I'm all right. He said, you're in a terrible state. I said, a terrible state? He said, you must try and talk to yourself. He said, you're pale and wan. Pale and wan. He said, you want a good holiday? That's what's wrong with you. So it started me thinking. You see, I went home, I looked at myself in the mirror, and I thought, oh, yes, good gracious. I said, you're looking nearly 25. Look at you. I said, I must, yeah. Oh. So I thought, no, listen. So I thought to myself, I'll have a holiday. That's it, holiday. So I went to this travel agency. What's this place? In Mile End Road. Never again. I wouldn't go there. Mile End Road. And there was this woman. I went in, there was this woman sat there behind the counter. Oh, poor soul, she was fat. Oh, she was huge. I mean, every time she breathed, everything quivered, you know. You know. And so I said, excuse me, I said, could I see your brochures? So she said, I beg your pardon? I said, your brochures, your tours. She said, you're not touring over my brochures. She said, yes. I thought we got a right one here for a start. I said, look, I'm on a holiday. I'm come for a holiday, a nice cheap holiday. She said, oh. She said, well, have you tried potholing? So I said, well, I thought it sounds vulgar enough for me. So I thought, no, the weather. No, I don't think it's me. Well, she said, why not try a boat on the Broads? I thought, I'd rather try some Broads on a boat. But then, listen, anyway. No, I'm sorry. No, that's neither here nor there. So anyway, she said, look, I can do you a nice 10-guinea cruise. So I thought, that's cheap, see? So I said, right, it's me, that's it, you're on. So I went in this trawler, sharing a cabin with half a ton of coke. And there I was, yes, 10 guineas, I thought it's worth it for 10 guineas. No, this is it. Where was our first port of call, may I ask? Where was our first port of call? Tokyo. Tokyo. I could tell it wasn't Rotherhithe as soon as we stepped ashore. I thought, it's not Rotherhithe for a start. That's a lovely place, Tokyo. It's like a sort of inscrutable Tunbridge Wells. And I've no digs. No digs, you see. So I went to this rickshaw driver. So he took me to this tea house. It was called the Tea House of the Seven Dragons. And this woman opened the door. She was one of them, obviously. Sloppy cat. It was the middle of the afternoon. There she was, dressed in this dressing gown and slippers, halfway down the afternoon. I said, I'm sorry, Mrs. I said, if I've woken you up from your kip. Oh, she said, no. Oh, she said, no, this is traditional dress. This is kimono. So she showed me to my room, a lovely room. It was a low three-piece suite, two rush mats and a cushion. So she said, you pay me week in advance. She said to me, would you like geisha now? So I said, well, I said, if you've got the kettle on, I said, because I can be just as inscrutable as they can be, don't worry. No, I said, look, actually, I said, Mrs., I'd like to clean up. Well, she said, you can start with that joke about the geisha. I said, no, me want bath. So I went down to this, never again. I went down to this bathhouse. Listen, I'm not kidding of you. This woman came up to me, a woman in this oriental with these almond eyes. She said, take your clothes off. I said, we hardly know each other. I said, she said, no, me bath you. I said, you're not my nanny, I said. She said, no, here is custom. I couldn't utter her feelings. I didn't know what to do. I was in a terrible state. So I compromised. I said, look, I'll take my socks off. I said, that is as far as I'm going. Because, you know, when you're modest by nature, but it happened. I succumbed. As soon as her back was turned, I did a terrible thing, you know. I did something shameful. I stole the soap. I pinched the soap. There, I'm glad I've told you. I've confessed. I'm glad I've told you. Nobody goes to sleep while I'm on, don't worry. Thought you were dozing off a bit then. That night they came for me to avenge their honour, these samurai. They said the only thing to do is to commit harikari. I thought, I'll hardly know the man, I thought, I can't. The leader said, it's honourable, don't you want to join your ancestors? Well, I said, not particularly, they're always squabbling. He said, you must commit harikari. So they left me alone with this dagger in this room. And I thought to myself, shall I do it? I thought, what, for a bit of soap? Not on your Japanese Nelly. I had a terrible time getting back. It's all right. Do you know, do something? Because I haven't got any money. I couldn't afford the plane trip or a boat. I've come back by rickshaw. All the way from Japan. I've been crossing the channel. I got soaked to the skin. I mean, it's ridiculous, eh? Well, I have to go. The man's out there. The rickshaw driver's waiting for his tip. I'd better go.
Frank.
Yes.
I noticed that little song in the beginning.
Oh, I'm glad you noticed that, because that's why it was there, so you should notice it.
Very good it was.
Oh, you mustn't, you're too flattering.
No, I mean it.
Did you?
You don't sing very much in your act. Your voice is broken, of course.
You mean like your neck will be?
Charming.
Yes. Well, no, I don't. I used to sing. I don't sing now. I mean, you see this Sammy Davis Jr., you know.
Yes.
Man, well, he does all this singing and dancing and does impressions and plays the drums and the piano. I don't believe in all that. It's too much for one man. I just like it easily, you know. I don't believe in flogging yourself silly. Right. And, I mean, all this singing, you have to shout and use your throat so much, you see. And I have to shout enough as it is with talking. So I don't want to do the singing as well and shout that as well, you see. And, I mean, this, what's her name? The woman who does those numbers. What's her name? Maria Callas, you know.
Maria Callas?
Maria Callas. Well, she said to me only, when was it today? Tuesday week. She said,
It's not worth bursting a gut, mate, she said. She said, I don't. She said, oh, what? I'd watch it. Oh, no. Mind you, it's different for her, admittedly. I mean, she doesn't have to tell jokes, you know.
Quite.
I'm not poo-pooing her.
No, no, I wouldn't want you to poo-poo her.
I mean, she's a nice... No, no.
No.
I mean, she's a nice little turn, you know, in her own way.
Yeah.
Oh, she's a nice little woman. I'm very fond of Mariah. And she's got a nice voice. But, I mean, what else can she do? That's the thing, you see. What else can she do? I mean, after all, she's no Elmer Cogan, is she?
No. If we could get back to the comedy.
Comedy,
Francis, timing is very important, isn't it?
Oh, I can't tell you.
Yes. Well, how do you manage it?
What? Oh, the timing. Well, you see, I talk. Then when the audience laughs, I keep quiet. And then when they shut up, I start talking again, you see?
Well, what happens if they don't laugh?
I don't stop talking.
Oh, I see. As simple as that.
Oh, well, no. I mean, it's not as simple as that. Stage deportment, that's very important. They call it stage deportment.
Stage deportment. Yes. What do you mean?
Moving, you see. Keep on the move, kid. Don't make yourself an easy target.
Mm. Tell me something.
What?
Do you ever ad-lib?
I want to tell you that every word I utter is written by the writers. Why should I take the blame?
Mm. You can sit there and say you make nothing up yourself, apart from your age.
And there must be an answer for that. Look, Pete, judge for yourself.
I will. Members of the jury, listen to this piece of evidence and then bring in your own verdict of guilty.
No, honestly, I'm sorry. I just don't fancy it tonight. I'm sorry, I don't. I just don't fancy it. And when you don't fancy it, there's no sense in forcing yourself because, it's all right for them to say go out there and be funny. I don't feel like it. I just don't, you know. I don't feel I can sort of force myself, you know. I don't always. I'm upset, that's the trouble. I've been cut to the quick. And my quick has been cut, definitely. You know how cuddly I quick as well. I mean, it's the BBC, listen, it's the BBC's fault. I blame the BBC, you know. They don't appreciate me. They do not appreciate me. I offer to be the next star of This Is Your Life. And they fob me off. Fob me off, you see? Poor fobbed off Francis. And you know why? You know why? Eamon Andrews, jealous. He stands there, flashing his teeth and breathing stout over everybody. And he's... No, actually... Ah, now, you see... No, he's had the needle to... Listen, now, please, no, don't... Please, now, please, I must have shush, please. I must have a modicum of shush. Now, no, he's had the needle to me ever since... What's my line? Because, you see, once... What's my line? I was a guest celebrity, you see, and the trouble was nobody knew who I was, even when they took their masks off. The humiliation. I was the only celebrity who had to do a mime. Anyway. No. I tried in Children's Hour, you know. I tried Children's Hour. I tried to get a part in Toy Town. And the attitude. And that Larry the Lamb's got a filthy tongue, you know. It's scandalous. Scandalous. And they said, do you know what they said? The gall to say to me, I'm too old to change my style. Too old to change my style. Me? Old? I mean, admittedly, I'm past my first flush. But it doesn't mean I won't flush again. I mean, I went to see the head. You know, I went to see the head of that programme. What's that one now? That was the week that was. You know, that thing, see? Ned Sherrin, the producer. So I said, now you're the head, Ned. How about... Yes, you see, yes. How about giving Francis his chances? I thought, that'll get me in. He said, I'm sorry, you're a bit old for that was the week that was. I'm sorry. I said, what do you mean? He said, no. He said, you're more, those were the days. And I see, it was a nasty, nasty attitude, you see. He said, what we're trying to do is to move the public. I said, the public what? He said, yes, you see, oh, what? He said, how far are you prepared to go? Well, I said, depends on where you want to move it to. He said, are you prepared to be outspoken? I said, you mean smutty, don't you? He said, well, I couldn't think of the word. I said, look, I'm known as Family Fun Francis, I said. I mustn't be filthy. I said, I should be known as Filthy Family Fun Francis. And I said, I don't mind comparing. I said, I mind a bit of comparing, you know. But you see, David Frost wouldn't hear of that. David Frost wouldn't stand for it. Jealous, you see? Jealous, David Frost. There I was. Nipped in the bud by a severe frost. What? You don't get gags like this in the Archers, but that's the trouble.
They're a clique. They're all a clique. They're all from Oxford and Cambridge. It's no good telling dirty jokes these days unless you've got a degree. That was my handicap. You see, I haven't had this university education. David Frost, Cambridge. Beyond the Fringe crowd, Cambridge. Me, Balls Pond Road Evening Institute. It don't carry the weight, it don't. It don't. Mind you, I spent a little time at... I did spend some time at public school. It was scholarship, scholarship. I came up on a bursary. It was too far to walk. And, it's all right. So, please. I listen, you laugh. I wish you could have seen me then. I was a bonny lad in those days. I was in my eaten collar, my eaten jacket and moth-eaten trousers. The trouble was, the other children laughed at me. They laughed at me. You see, I came from a poor home. A poor, simple lad from a fish shop. No wonder I had a chip on my shoulder. Isn't it witty? Isn't it? Well, please yourselves. Anyway, these kids, they laughed at me. I wish you'd join them. The school, the old school. I remember it well. The old bell tower, the old lab. We had two labs. Wait a minute. Two labs. One for chemistry, one for physics. The old ivy-covered walls, the old moss-covered games mistress. But I was lonely, you see, because I hadn't got the same background as these other boys. One day I was hosing down the art mistress, and it was hot. And I saw her, the headmaster's wife, Lobelia Pothandle. And yes, she took pity on me. And every afternoon, when old Dr. Pothandle was busy with his botany, she used to invite me to the house for a bit of tea and sympathy. Well, actually, it wasn't tea and sympathy, really. It was cocoa and consolation, but it was lovely. It was very nice. Just the two of us sitting there, flicking the skin off the cocoa at the cat. It was a beautiful sight. And talking, she said, tell me about your hopes, your dreams, your desires. So I told her, and she smacked my face. Cheeky cat. She told the headmaster, old Dr. Pothandle. He expelled me. I didn't want to leave, but I had to, you see. It was just what the doctor ordered. So that was it, no. But you see, I spoke to her. I mean, this is what annoys me. I mean, I haven't had the education. I know that. But I mean, the producer of this programme, you know, this the old gentleman who produces this programme, I don't know if it's Bill Worsley. Well, he's a nice little man, you know, underneath. But I mean, he said to me, you must do this satire, he says. Have a go, knock. He said, knock the politicians, have a go. He said, let's have some viciousness. He said, you know, I mean, I don't agree with this, do you? All this satire business, all this knocking. I'm not that kind, I'm more the lovable kind, you know. I'm not that kind. And everybody knocks these days, don't they? Everybody knocks. And why should I knock? Knock Macmillan, he says. Why should I knock Macmillan? I mean, he's only one man against all the government. I think it's so unfair, don't you? I mean, well, don't you think so? I mean, I don't know the man. I've had no dealings with the man. Well, I say no dealings. There was this business over the common market, wherever that is. I mean, we had this... I don't know. I mean, see, now you tell me, I don't understand this. Now, there we are, you see. We've been trying to get in the common market. They send this man over to Brussels to get us in the common market. What's his name? Edward Heath. Why send a band leader? Because I don't understand this. I mean, Ackerbilk, yes. I mean, at least it sounds European. Ackerbilk. And I told Macmillan, you know, I'm sorry I told him, because I'm very forthright. I told him, I thought to myself, I must find out about this. You see, I'm interested. I thought to myself, I'll go to the top man. I'll go and see Macmillan after we put him in. You know, I'm entitled to. So I saw him not here, down in Chequers. And this is, you know, the country, but beautiful place. Oh, it's a beautiful place. Oh, because it goes with the job, of course. I mean, that's why he's hanging on to it, naturally. But I mean, you... But I mean, I was passing by. Actually, I was on a cycle rally, and I was passing by. And we can be found. Oh, and there we were, you see. So I went and I told him, I said, Harold, I said, be careful. I said, don't rush into this, be careful, do. But he didn't get the message. He didn't get the message, because it's very difficult when you're shouting through a letterbox. You don't get the impetus. Eh? Oh, wait a minute, the producer's at it. Yes, all right. He thinks I'm starting a revolution. I better go. Oh, I'm coming, Mush. All right, he's a funny man.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, what's the time?
Oh, dear, yes. I'm very sorry. I'm afraid we'll have to finish now. I'm very sorry, because I've enjoyed this, you know, and I hope you have too, very sincerely. And I want to thank Pete Murray, my friend here, for helping me out.
Not at all, not at all. It's a pleasure to pay tribute to a grand old-timer like yourself.
Yeah, 27.
Frank, I have here a who's who of 1902.